Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Joining me today on the Stone Chapel is Katya Kovret. She's got a Master's of Theological Studies. She's also a PhD candidate. But she is, her current position is, the Executive Editor for Zondervan Academic. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Now let's talk about let's talk about kind of the status of women in academic publishing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been some concerns over the years about that. So what's happening now for women in academic publishing?
Yeah, well, the whole discussion, conversation, and debate about state of women in the academy and in academic publishing. And I would also add, it's also related to the question of scholars of color, majority world scholars. So it's not just women, but it's representing the diverse body of Christ that is Christian scholarship, scholars who work toward Christian theology and work in biblical studies. So it will not surprise anybody that we have somewhat of an overrepresentation of white men in our academy. And that's, I mean, there's history that's involved in that.
Sure.
But that is our current reality. So I have been working to address this internally from the Zondervan academic side of things for many years. But more recently, I have been sort of thrust into the public sphere on this issue, which has afforded me some opportunity to write more on the issue more publicly and to speak as well on occasion. So it came about as a couple of different criticisms our academic catalog received about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's something that we face fairly regularly. We get people contacting marketing people, just writing emails and such, saying, you know, why don't you have more women in your catalog? But this particular one became more public and more visible, so it kind of put me a little bit on the forefront of discussing some of these issues.
A place that you feel very comfortable, I'm sure, being in the forefront.
No, not really.
It's not what editors do, right?
No, but I think the issue is important, I think it's important for me as a female academic editor to address this as well. Because I speak from a slightly different perspective, also being Russian. So I was not raised in the civilized West, if you will, or what's traditionally associated with theology. So I represent a degree of diversity, not just being a woman, but also being not a Westerner.
Not Western, yeah.
So publishers are routinely chastised for lack of women in our academic catalogs and our publications.
It's probably not specific to theology either in biblical studies. I mean, at least a few years ago, it seemed like that still adult.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. There was actually an interesting online article by a woman who was a chief scientist at NASA, and she wrote an article about women in STEM disciplines, that is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And she was mourning the fact that the workforce, the STEM workforce in the U.S. only has 25% of women. Only 25% of women. Well, I believe the numbers that I checked, last thing I checked SBL, I think it was around 24%.
So it's about the same.
It's about the same.
Roughly the same.
So, but and she cites, the scientist cites these numbers as appalling numbers. And so it got me thinking that, well, we're not that far off and we don't seem to be, you know, in many corners too concerned about it. So, but one thing that caught my attention there is a story that she tells. She says, we know some of the reasons women and girls participate in STEM disciplines at lower rates. Lack of encouragement, active discouragement, lack of role models, negative peer pressure, and harassment. And then she pulls this phrase, you can't be what you can't see.
That's interesting.
Because she says when a pupil, a school student, is given a task to draw a scientist, most students draw a white man in a white lab coat.
Mm.
That's the perception. So you can't see, so you can't imagine that, you know, a scientist
could
be anyone
else. I could be there.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You can't imagine that, but if that's not what you see. Interesting.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I've been acutely aware of the imbalance between male and female authors in our catalog and publishers' catalogs in general, and the Zondervan Academic one in particular. So, and I've worked hard to address this problem for over a decade.
So what is that? How do you address the problem? Because a part of what you said, where if you don't see a woman teaching theology or Bible or archaeology in a place, it's hard to sort of imagine yourself getting to that point, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're in a better position than we were years before. So because we do have more women in divinity disciplines
right
now, so we have more female role models. When I was in seminary, all of my professors were men. So my mentors, those who have supported and pushed me, they were all men, and I thoroughly appreciate
them. So you got some encouragement along the way.
Oh, certainly did.
Okay.
And I think it is important for women who are in scholarship or young students who are thinking of entering scholarships to build strong social networks. So, and those often begin with your mentors, who are often men, though hopefully that is changing now. There are more female role models available to us to see, you know, to be able to see what you can be.
Mm.
So
I remember a woman that I talked to a few years ago who went to Wheaton College, I think it was back in the 90s, and she wanted to go on and do a PhD, and she was discouraged from doing that. She said, well, it's not really anything for you to do with a PhD in biblical studies for a woman back in the 90s. Now, I think that's proven not to be the case,
mm-hmm.
but that was sort of the active way a male scholar saying to a female student, very impressionable at that age, I suppose, no, it's not going to work for you. And she was brokenhearted about it. It's mm-hmm. 30 years later, she was still thinking, gosh, I wish I had gone after that. Because now she can see some women who are role models
yeah.
in that in those kind of places.
Yeah, and, you know, I know of many women whose mentors, whose male mentors, have pushed them and prodded them and helped them and supported them. So they're extremely thankful for them. So, but unfortunately, you do have situations
do have
that are
like that.
Quite opposite, which is very sad and unfortunate. So, I mean, you got to build those strong social networks that consist of mentors, of female role models, if you can find them. So with peers, both men and women, you need to learn to engage broadly, not just engage, well, I'm a woman, I'm just going to engage with the scholarship of female scholars. No, you have to engage the academy broadly, or you're going to just reinforce the problem on the other end,
mm-hmm.
basically. Mm-hmm. But editors can be part of your strong social networks. More and more of us are aware of this problem, and we're working hard, intentionally seeking out, you know, qualified trained women who are willing and interested to write and able to.
So in terms of, if you look at your catalog now, do you have a sense of what percentage, or is that a fair question at this point? have you done the numbers at
well,
that point?
Well, you mean, know, as of 4 years ago, there was a certain blog post that did, you know, some very interesting calculations complete with pie charts and dissected our catalog by lack of women.
Mm.
That was the event, you know, in responding to that blog post, that would kind of put my own perspective out there in public.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we don't do it as publishing by numbers, or, you know, some people say doing scholarship by numbers or theology by numbers.
Right.
So it's not that, but it's making sure that we balance and we ask those hard questions every time we have a book idea. And I'm known on my team as that drippy faucet when with every book idea or proposal I say, couldn't we get a woman to do this? Couldn't we get a majority scholar I know to do this?
Mm.
You know, so those questions have to be asked. Mm. It has to become a publisher's and editor's vision up front, not an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes at best it's an afterthought. Sometimes it's not even a thought at all.
Yeah.
So you have to ask those questions and be more aware of what you're publishing. Mm-hmm. But I would flip it on toward the scholars as well. You need to be more aware of who your conversation partners are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're engaging same old people,
right,
who have likely been white men historically,
mm-hmm,
you know, where does that get you? What are you modeling to the new generation of scholars if your conversation partner circle is so narrow that they all look like you?
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of really wonderful women scholars that are coming up and coming through the ranks,
mm-hmm,
because they have been encouraged, they have are being networked into the academy. If you were to take a guess now, how long would it take to receive to achieve some sort of balance? Any idea? I mean, are we talking 50 years, 100 years? What do we, for, as an editor?
Oh, I mean, speaking for something like our catalog, I'm working against 90 years worth of backlist.
Ah, okay.
So
what's a backlist book?
Backlist book is a book that's been published for more than a year. So it's basically a book after its first year of life.
Mm-hmm.
So on the flip side, you have the frontlist books. Those are the books that have just come out. So 80% of our business, Zondervan Academic's business, is in the backlist, in the strength of our backlist.
Mm.
So in fact, some academic books stay in print and never go out of print.
Mm.
I mean, they stay in print for years.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So I've been at Zondervan 18 years now, and so I'm working against that massive backlist of 90 years in business.
Mm.
And so, quote-unquote, balancing that somehow?
Yeah, I mean, you can't
that's
balance.
That's probably going to take another 90 years.
You can't balance against that, but what about the new list coming out, let's say the 20 or so books that come out every year, the new books.
Yeah.
Do you feel better about the numbers there or the opportunities there for women to publish?
I do feel better about that. And, you know, consistently on my annual goals that I am responsible for as an acquiring editor, it's at the top of my list to ensure that we have a diverse list of new authors coming in.
Mm.
You know, I work with a number of commentary series, for example, and so we have had a long-standing NIV application commentary series that was started some 30 years ago.
We probably have most of those here, if not
mm-hmm,
all of them here at the
probably.
Lanier Library.
So it's 44 volumes.
Mm.
You venture a guess how many women are in that?
I don't know, 5, 4, what, 10?
One and a half.
Okay, now how did you get...
The half is there's a female scholar who's co-author on a volume.
Oh, I see. Okay, makes sense.
So one and a half
out of
44.
So that's
about
3%.
So on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Story of God Bible Commentary. That's 43 volumes, and it has almost half, more than one third cast female contributors.
Mm.
And very diverse also in terms of majority word scholars and scholars of color in it. And whenever it's inevitable in academic publishing that people, you know, drop a project because they can't complete it for one reason or another. And so you have to replace them. We are committed in that series, if a woman has to drop out, and that does happen.
It does happen, yeah.
We're not going to replace her with a guy.
Hmm. We want to keep those percentages roughly.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we try to, you know, give voice
mm-hmm.
to the female scholars
mm-hmm.
because they need to be more represented
mm-hmm.
in our academy. And so that's a particular way that publishers can shape the future of the academy and can help it. Because in many ways, it's this kind of symbiotic relationship. It's a catch-22, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, we are constrained by the shape of the academy. There are few women that we can go to. And especially, you know, I've been trying to get more women to publish with us for, you know, almost two decades. But it's often not for lack of trying.
Mm.
You know, when you start with a smaller pool of female scholars to
right.
begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start layering, oh, it has to be this discipline, and it has to be this approach, and it has to be this or that. Once you narrow down the expertise, the parameters of the book, you know, certain constraints, and then even the preferences and desires of the given scholar, you may have one or two or none left
right.
on that list.
Yeah.
And many just simply say no. Because of the increased awareness on behalf of publishers to publish more women and scholars of diversity, they get booked up quickly.
Mm. Are they overworked then? Are the same people overworked?
They can be.
Because sometimes you see
so.
The same names over and again.
Mm-hmm. It is hard because everyone is after you.
Right, right.
And so it makes it very hard to sometimes to fill those spots. So it's often not for lack of trying. But even that, for some, is becoming not enough of an excuse.
Hmm.
So that you got to work harder, be willing to cancel a project if it doesn't sufficiently represent the current right. shape of the academy.
It's really interesting, kind of the way you've been discussing the fact that the academy, to some degree, determines your business.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I was trying to remember where I was going with that.
But your
before.
Business also, to some degree, shapes the academy.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, like you said, symbiotic relationship.
Yes. Yeah, so the academy constrains us in certain ways, and then it shapes us also in terms of what are the current trends and what are the things that are happening in the conversations that are, worth engaging and promoting. And so then we make certain choices in what we publish. And some publishers, under an academic, tends to be a little bit more selective because there are only so many books that we can do. Mm-hmm. Every publisher is selective to an extent because no one can do it all.
Right, right.
And so, but what we do choose to publish and what does feed back into scholarship then comes back and it just builds and builds. And so there is that relationship. And so my hope is that as Zondervan Academic and other publishers, are my friends at other presses, work hard to bring in more diversity into Christian academic writing, that in turn will shape the academy as well. Because then the students who are currently looking toward doing scholarship at the higher level, they can see those role models.
Hmm.
They can see what they could potentially become.
Inspiring words to conclude on here today. Katya Kovret, she is the executive editor for Zondervan Academic. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.